Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a six-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. Today, we are talking to author and survivor David Tuckerow. He wrote a book, Bad to the Bone. He's going to tell us all about, his book and how painless a process it is to donate bone marrow. And, you know, I didn't realize that, so we're all going to learn something new today. How are you today, David?
I'm excellent. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. We were talking hockey right before the show, so you know that's
absolutely.
That always cheers me up. Go Kings. I know you want your Canadians to win, so we're hoping for that tonight.
Absolutely.
But let's start out just a little bit. Tell us about yourself and how old you were when you were diagnosed and how you found out.
Hi. Well, right now I'm 32. I was diagnosed at the age of 25. And how I found out was, actually early on, we had buried my grandfather in Fort Chippewa, Alberta. And that day I felt is the day I got it, because I remember getting this sharp stabbing pain in my left side. And it was like a really hot knife just repeatedly stabbing me. And I was curled up in a ball and I couldn't move, you know, and I was the lead pallbearer. So I sucked it up and, you know, I did my duties. I did what I had to do. And then when that was finished, I went back into this van, which, you know, I curled up in a ball and just kind of sat there for, you know, about an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And then from there it progressed, you know, extreme hemorrhaging, extreme fatigue, nausea, vomiting. I would be on a couch, and to get up to get a glass of water, which was 15, 20 feet away from me, would take all my energy out of me, and I would have to lie back on the couch for another 8 to 12 hours just to regain a little bit more energy to go to the bathroom. And I didn't, you know, take any of the warning signs apart from this is a really bad flu. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it progressed until December 23rd. You know, I got into my sister's house in Kelowna, British Columbia, and, you know, my parents and my family are doing all the pre-Christmas stuff, wrapping the presents, decorating the tree, playing board games, you know, the stuff that families do.
Right.
And I wasn't partaking in it. I was too busy lying down on the couch just out of it because I didn't have any energy and I didn't know what else to do. So my mom and sister got really upset, and they're like, okay, David, you know, they kind of called my bluff and said, okay, we're either going to call you an ambulance or we're going to take you to the hospital. Your choice. What do you want? Well, I'm a bit of an introverted person. You know, I don't like to cause a scene. I'm
right.
a very quiet person. So I said, just take me to the hospital. Let's go. So we get to the hospital at about 10 p.m. on the 23rd. And, they instantly admit me because I'd already had a huge fever. And we do it in Celsius. And I believe it was at like 49 or 50 degrees Celsius. And it was just way up there. So they're like, okay, there's something wrong. They brought me back, and they calmed my fever down. They gave me some Tylenol, calmed it right down. They did a series of blood draws, and each time it got progressively worse. They didn't tell me this time. They just kept coming back and taking more and more blood. And then about 2 o'clock on Christmas Eve, the doctor had come back. You know, your white cells are this, your T cells are this, your hemoglobin is this, your red cells are this, blah, blah, blah. You have leukemia, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just sitting there thinking, what's leukemia?
Yeah.
I know what leukemia and exactly what it is. But when he said it to me, I didn't know what it was. And you know, I this is obviously the shock kind of setting in. And I didn't know what to do or what to think or how to feel. I was just so numb. And my mom came in and she's like, well, what are the doctors saying? And I'm like, Mom, he says I have leukemia. I'm like, what's leukemia? She kind of freaked out, ran to the doctor, and about 45 minutes later, they come back, and my mom is just in tears, and the doctor said, look, there's a medevac plane coming to get you right now to bring you to Vancouver, and there's a team ready for you down there.
Holy
and
cow.
At which point, I'm thinking, oh, okay, this is really serious now, because I've never heard, you know, medevac, you know, those terms thrown at me before, and I was, you know, scared, you know,
right.
I mean, I'm told I have leukemia. I don't know what leukemia is. And I'm now told I'm on a medevac. And then I get on the medevac. And I remember this really serene moment when I was on the plane. And I remember looking out of the window and seeing the sunrise over the coastal mountain range and thinking, if this is the last thing I ever see, I'm glad it was this, because this is just amazingly beautiful. And I got to Vancouver, and then that's, you know, when the whole treatment regimen started. They gave me a hip biopsy before I'd gotten through their front doors and instantly admitted me to the cancer ward. And, you know, it was quarantined off, and it was like a scene out of Outbreak, you know, where people are coming in with these big suits, and it was really scary.
That's crazy. I've never heard of anything happening like that. Yeah, I mean, it's good that they got you in fast, but your mind must have been racing. Like, what, I'm on a medevaced out? I mean, that's usually what you see on TV. That's crazy.
It is, you know, and I'm just thinking, like, this is a scene out of a Hollywood movie, you know? Like, this just doesn't happen. And when I had the team of doctors there, I'm pretty sure he was Scottish. He was definitely from the U.K., but I'm not sure if it's Scottish, Irish, or Welsh, but he had an accent on him. He said, okay, I'm sorry, you're going to feel a little pressure here. And I held this over the doctor's head for so long, and I don't know why. I was just being silly. But he's like, you're going to feel a little pressure. And the next thing I know, I had a hip biopsy, and it felt like every nerve in my leg swelled up and exploded. And I was just like, oh, little pressure. And I was just so angry with him for that. But he was doing his job, you know, so I couldn't be mad at him for that.
Yeah, that's... Wow. I'm still just shocked about saying you have leukemia and they don't even, like, kind of give you time to process that. They just, like, whisk you away to Vancouver.
Yeah. But the thing is because I was already at a very, very late stage 3. Like, this is almost getting into my other organs at this point, you know? It's just, like, one step away from it happening. And it was, you know, the only necessary thing to happen. And, yeah, it was, man. It was like the scene out of a Hollywood movie, you know? Everything just happened so fast. And I remember my mom almost, you know, got in a fight with one of the the ladies who was a paramedic because they were going to say, no, you can't come on this plane with us. No, you got to figure it out. Hell no, I'm not figuring it out. I'm getting on that plane with my son.
Yeah,
you're crazy if you think I'm not getting on that plane.
Exactly.
You know, so my mom just lost it. And she got on the plane, obviously. They weren't going to argue. They didn't have any time to waste. And I just remember looking over at my mom, and her face was just, I've never seen her face like that. You know, she was so scared and worried and just so afraid, you know, like I've never seen my mom look like that in my life, and it broke my heart.
But you're going on 7 years now, or 7 years.
Yes, it was 7 years, actually, May 3rd.
Oh,
so, you know, I just passed. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, when I first got my bone marrow transplant, it was all about hitting that 1 year mark.
Yes.
You know, if you can hit that 1 year mark, boom, you know, you're good for that. You know, you're going to make that next year. So for me, it was all about hitting that 1 year mark, you know, because they say 5 until you're in the clear.
Right.
But for me, realistically, it's hitting that 1 year mark. Because if you hit that 1 year mark, your mental frame changes and it's all right, now this next year is going to be simple. And you know what? It's just going to be a breeze until the 5 year. And you know what? It was for me.
So let me ask you, since I don't know, I mean, I had breast cancer, so I know they do the chemo and radiation. You had a bone marrow transplant. What does that entail? Like, somebody donated bone marrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens after that? Like, how does that work? What do they do?
It's just like a blood transfusion,
oh,
you know,
okay.
They get a bag of blood and they hang it and they run it into you, but they have to run it really, really, really slow. So it's like about a 5 hour process, you know, and, you know, for the first, I'd say hour and a half, 2 hours, maybe the first half of it, I was fine joking around with everybody, you know, how is everybody doing? What's going on? Just, you know, talking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like a little kind of a little party, if you will, like a brand new life party. And I had everybody that I loved there. My friends, my family, you know, my friends' parents were there. Just everybody was there. And then all of a sudden I started feeling it. And at first my hearing started getting really magnified to where I could hear a pin drop like 5 miles away. It was that intense. And I was just like, oh my God, I just started getting really weird. And then I noticed that my vision started getting all wonky and it like magnified to like a pinpoint. And then the nurses had to get everybody out of there, you know, and the effects started to happen. And all I remember really is being really cold and asking for warm blankets. And they're like, you've already got 17. I'm like, give me more blankets. I need more blankets. I need more blankets. I need more warm blankets. I was so cold. By the time it had finished, you know, the whole feelings about maybe a few hours later kind of wore off a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they couldn't sedate me or anything. So I just kind of had to go with it. And so I was, you know, pretty tired after all that. And I was asleep for, I think, a couple of days. And, you know, at first it was really rough, but after that, you know, it just, my count started to get better. And, you know, with that, you know, I was always mentally like, okay, David, your numbers got to at least be one little tiny bit better.
And, I know, right? Well, you know what? I had the same thing.
Huge. It was always about the little bit, mm-hmm. you know,
yes.
It was always a little bit. And if I got it, oh my God, it was, just, I would always hold on to that feeling. Mm-hmm. So that way I could never lose it. And that way my counts, the next time, if they were lower, it wouldn't hurt me because I know I was already somewhere better,
right.
And I could easily get back there and then get better than that. So my mind, you know, I played tricks with myself, but in a good way.
Well, I think you're like a lot of survivors. I was the same way. Like did you only have the one bone marrow transplant?
Yes, and, okay. And from what I'm told, I'm only able to get one, and if it rejects at any time, that's it. It's kind of game over, you know?
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah, and I would do that the same thing, too. We'd see the white counts, and if it was up a little, it would be like a little celebration.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tricks, like you said, you tell your mind, it's like, okay, well, I'm getting better, because everybody thinks it's like, okay, well, I want to get better, and you assume you're going to get better faster than you will when you have cancer, you know, because I'm sure you looked fine. And you look at yourself in the mirror, you're like, yeah, I feel pretty good. But then when you see your white counts and you feel kind of tired, you're just like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So you have to keep telling yourself, you know, it's those small victories, you know, even though you personally had nothing to do with your white counts going up. It's like mentally, you're like, yes.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, I found is it's a lot of it is mind over matter. And for me, you know, I was always a very pessimistic person. That's just who I was. And, you know, this, you know, being forced with this, it really made me change the way I thought and to be a positive thinker and, you know, to never give up. You know, it gave me that fighting spirit. And it was kind of a blessing, you know. And I hate to say that because it was such a horrible thing. But what that did for me, you know, like I said, I was introverted really bad. I was stuck in such a thick shell. And what this did for me was it broke that shell away from me. It made me understand the value of life and the importance of life. And it made me really respect, you know, that this is it. This is all we have. And you need to make the most of it, you know. So there's a lot of, you know, real personal motivation to want to be better after this. And that's exactly what it did for me, you know.
I agree. And I think a lot of survivors feel that way. Like they don't want to thank cancer. In a way, but I think just the whole facing your own mortality changes a lot of people. And you and I will see somebody who hasn't faced, you know, either cancer or some sort of adversity, and you'll be like, why aren't they enjoying life? Even if it's just like, I had an incident where someone parked in my parking spot and I had to park in a different one because I pay for parking, and it was in a carport, and it was early in the morning, and I had a test to go to, and I pulled off half of my bumper. It ended up costing me $200, but I was laughing because I'm just like, you know what? If this is the worst thing that happens to me today, then it's all good.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. And people just, they don't understand that they're so lucky, you know? I mean, we put such emphasis on the silliest things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you know, it's like if you're breathing, if you're walking, mm-hmm. if you're laughing, hey, man, you're so much further ahead than most people. Because the way I look at it is, you know what? I wake up every day in extreme pain. Right now, I'm at a 10 out of 10 on the pain scale, but you would never know it because I don't show it.
Right.
I have a disease in me called avascular necrosis. Ooh. I've had my left shoulder replaced. I've had both my hips replaced, and I've had my right knee replaced. On Thursday, I have another appointment to go see the surgeon because I've got to now get my right shoulder replaced. I live pain every day, mm-hmm. you know?
So you're kind of bionic, though. That's awesome.
Well, actually, there's another story to that in a second.
Okay.
But the thing is if I let that consume me,
yes.
Game over. Game over. That's it, you know. There's no more, you know, than I've let the disease consume me. And like I said, right now, you know, I woke up this morning and my legs are just, you know, horribly in pain. You know, I've got this really intense radiating pain from my knee all the way up to my hip, through my femurs, down through my shins, all throughout my lower back. But I don't let it get to me, you know. It's
exactly.
Just like, hey, I'm still alive. You know, I've got something that a lot of people don't have. I'm still alive, you know. And as soon as I take that for granted, game over, you know. I can't do that.
I agree. You definitely have the spirit that a lot of survivors have, for sure.
Absolutely. Oh, and to go back to the bionic thing,
yes,
it's funny
yes.
that you said that because I've been a DJ since 1997, and since going through all this, my new DJ name is Bionic Dave.
That's awesome.
So that's why I was kind of chuckling earlier there.
So what was it like to have somebody write this? Like, how did somebody find you to get your book written, or you saw
it? What happened was I read Marilyn Scott's book In Our House, and mm-hmm. I was just floored by her story. And I just thought to myself, I want somebody like that to write my story. And so, you know, by a fluke and by, you know, luck and obviously God looking over me.
Yes.
He said, I'm going to put this person in your life. She's going to do your story the justice that it needs being done. And we're going to get your story out there, and we're going to help save some lives, and we're going to help promote, you know, people donating bone marrow at the same time. So what I got, you know, and it was being conscious of my gifts and what was happening to me. It was, you know, about saving and helping people and getting people to think straight in that bone marrow donations are not a painful process like they used to be. Before, yeah, it was absolutely painful, but now it's not. With technology coming as far as it has, it's as simple as getting a needle in one arm and a needle in the other arm. The blood will go from one arm into a machine. It will shake your platelets, your blood, and your bone marrow, keep your marrow, and put your blood and platelets back into you. So you're not losing anything.
Right.
You know? It's just such a painless process, and I cannot stress that enough. My mission right now is to get as many bone marrow donors as possible and to let them know that it's a painless process and to get them to spread the word to other people that it's not a painless process and that it's a simple process. And then from there, we can just, you know, get the ball rolling and just get everybody to donate bone marrow.
And the bone marrow donation is, I mean, the swab. What is that? Is that what you call it? Not the donation,
yes.
But the test. Just to...
Yeah, what they do is... if you go to my website, www.davidtuckerow.com, right. There's a link on there that says become a donor. If you click on that, you put your information in, and what the Delete Blood Cancer people will do is send you out a swab kit.
Okay.
And you get this like long Q-tip, and you swab the inside of your cheeks, put it back into the container, and you send it back to them. From there, they'll run your DNA. And if you're an instant match, you'll be notified. If not, they'll keep your DNA on a data bank until you are a match. And,
sweet.
You know, they'll get back to you right away. And then from there, the amazing process will start to help save a life. And you know, like I said, it's not a painful process. It's mm-hmm. very painless. So that's, you know, what I'm trying to get out to everybody is that it's very painless. And, you know, my bone marrow donor... He didn't know who I was. He was halfway across the world in Germany.
Oh.
But, you know, when they said there's a young man in Canada, 24 years old, that is a match for your bone marrow, will you donate to him? Absolutely I will. Why wouldn't I? That's what I signed it up for.
Right.
Save him. Give it to him.
Did you meet
know?
your marrow donor?
Oh, God, you have no idea. The story behind that. I was in Los Angeles International Airport,
mm-hmm.
and... It was a big yellow line, and in big, bold letters, it says, do not cross. Well, I was there for about 4 or 5 hours because, you know, the...
Because it's LAX,
process,
right?
You know, it's a long process. So he
yes.
was in line for a long time. And I'm stood there with a sign that said, you know, welcome into my bone marrow donor. And everybody, you know, that day came up to me and they're like, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. That's amazing. That's so awesome and good for you. Congratulations. Just all kinds of praise. And it was just such a beautiful thing for me. So when I'm stood up, before, you know, in front of the yellow line, I see him come out and he points at me and I'm like, point to him. And he shakes his head. Yeah. So I drop the sign, run past the yellow line and I give him a hug. And the guards, you know, I thought would have been upset, but you know what? They just let the moment happen.
Right.
And I was just so thankful that they did.
That's
and,
awesome.
You know, from there, it was just like, why did you do it? Why did you donate? And what made you want to donate? And what was your reasoning for it? Just so many questions, you know?
Right.
And just, oh, my gosh, it was just the most surreal. Like, here I am face to face with a man that saved my life. What do you do? What do you say? You know, like, there's just so much that goes through your head. And the power of that, the magnitude of that is just, it's just unparalleled, you know, it's just so amazing.
But he was probably just like, well, you know, it was just something
just
I had to
do. Just another day.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's just how Christian is. He's just a very humbled man who, you know, he had a family member who was sick, mm-hmm. and, you know, his church did a bone marrow drive to try and save this kid's life, and he wasn't a match, but, you know, they asked him, do you want to keep your data on file in case you do become a match? Absolutely.
Right.
And sure enough, that's when I came around. But the other part of that, and with this, you know, we're genetic DNA twins.
Right.
So, yeah. But the thing about it is there was actually another one of us because the doctor said that there was two matches,
that's
two
crazy.
Perfect matches. So I, you know, talked to Christian and we joke. And I'm like, you know, there's another one of us out there, you know. I wish we could find him, but there's another one of us out there.
Did you ever find him? Are you?
No.
Or that's kind of...
Yeah, no, that's confidential because
right.
when you get the bone marrow transplant, you have to wait for 2 years. And I believe that's just to make sure that it takes and that you're good in remission and that, you know, you don't pass on. And so you have to wait 2 years and then you're able to meet your bone marrow donor. And that's kind of a funny story because it took 4 years for me and Christian to meet. But that wasn't his fault, and that wasn't my fault. And I don't blame, you know, the DKMS or Vancouver. It was just somewhere along the lines, it was just lost in translation, you know.
Oh, right.
Because I was writing to Vancouver Bone Marrow Registry, and he was writing to the DKMS in Germany. I want to meet him, you know, just back and forth. And then finally...
That's two countries and an organization, couple organizations you're dealing with. So that's a lot of red tape right there.
Absolutely it is. And, you know, I found there's a lot of that. And I know this kind of case. But, yeah, you know, after when we met, it was just the most amazing thing. It's like I'd known this guy all my life and we talk every single day now, you know. And
that's awesome.
This guy is just so incredible. You know, I don't know what else to say to him. Like, I've flown him over here a couple of times. I've flown his family over here. And still that just doesn't seem like enough to say thank you to him, you know. It just doesn't for me. I will always be eternally grateful. But for him, no, you don't. As long as you're living, that's all I need. That's thanks enough, you know?
Right. That's
and
amazing.
Do you know the magnitude of that? Like, that's just such a beautiful thing to say.
Well, I don't think people realize that. Like when you're, like you said, it's a simple cheek swab. I mean, if you get that thing in the mail, you could pretend like you're, you know, if you're nervous about it, pretend somebody is like Abby from NCIS giving you the cheap, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how easy it is. And you send it in and just imagine how amazing it would be if you found somebody that you could help.
Exactly. Just, and it's funny to say Abby because I actually met her once and she's actually a really, really nice person.
Is.
Yeah, she's really awesome.
How did you meet her?
She was, she gave the graduation speech at my friend's graduation at the university, or not university, college. And yeah, she was just such a really, really awesome person.
She is very nice. She's a friend of a friend of mine. So yeah.
Oh,
so
I always
say, you know, if you're nervous, just, you know, everybody watches NCIS or CSI or those shows. I mean, that's pretty much all it is to have them check to see if you're a match to someone. And now that, I mean, I had no idea because I remember... Like we were talking before the show, the bone marrow thing, you'd see the giant needle go into someone's hip and they were just always in pain. And
it's just not like that anymore.
It's not like that anymore. And I think a lot of us still have those old misconceptions like of we see cancer survivors and, you know, chemotherapy and treatment regimens that just aren't that way anymore that we remember from our childhood or even the way movies portray them now.
Absolutely.
You know? I mean, look at you. You met you found your match in Germany of all places. Like if somebody had said, "Oh yeah, your match is in Germany," you probably said, "No way, no way is that."
You see, that's actually funny that you say that though, because I actually did say that when I found a match. The first thing I said was, "Well, you know, because I'm half Native American and half British. My mom's from Manchester, England. My dad's Native American from Fort Chippewyan, Alberta." And I remember thinking. And I even said it out loud. I'm like, I bet you any money, my bone marrow donor will be European, and I guarantee he'll either be from England or he'll be from Germany.
Really?
And the reason why, I said Germany is because I've always known Germany to be so far ahead of, you know, like cancer research and everything.
Oh.
And I always said, I guarantee it'll be a European person, and if British, because of my mom.
Mm-hmm.
It was one thought, but I said it'll be definitely got to be a German person because they're so far ahead of all that. And sure enough, it was German. So I was actually floored that I was right on that, but I actually said it, you know?
You're like, no way. I know. And that's just, I'm just
it's
amazed.
It's a crazy premonition.
It is a crazy premonition. Now, getting to that, because I wanted to ask you, you said you started to get sick when your grandfather passed away, or when you were at his funeral. Do you feel that he had...
imminent to me?
No, that he kind of, like, he knew that you were sick and he wanted to bring it out so you could get better.
I've had a lot of crazy thoughts like that. Yeah, absolutely. Like, when my father or grandfather passed, it was like, you know, we always had a special relationship, you know?
Right.
He never talked. He was a very quiet person. And when he was in a good mood, he whistled, and that was it. But for some reason, he always talked to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I believe there was something to do with that. Yeah, absolutely. Like, when I did that, he gave it to me. But I think, you know, it was God never gives you more than you can handle.
Right.
And I believe that's exactly what happened, was when he passed, that he did that for me, just to kind of, you know, kick me in the butt a little, you know, to get me going, you know.
Right.
Because at that point, I was just working, going home, going to sleep, going to work, going home, going to sleep. And that was it, you know. And what this did for me was it gave me what my destiny was, and that was to be a helping person.
And it definitely opened your eyes to, you know, life and other people, for sure.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's, like you said, you never want to thank cancer for anything, but I think any time.
You have to sometimes.
You kind of have to. I don't like to give it that power, but yeah.
No,
I mean,
no, you know, you never want to give it that power, but at the same time, you know. Like I said, you know, it took me a long time to understand. And believe me, I was really angry with God for a long time. Like, I don't care that you did this to me.
Right.
I can handle that. How are you going to do that to a child?
Right.
That's what bothered me. That's what was just like, what is wrong, you know? But it was talking to a lot of people, different walks of life, different faith, you know, whether it was Muslim, Christian, Hindu, or, you know, Buddhist. Everybody said the same thing. God does stuff for a reason.
Right.
To bring, you know, families closer together, communities, country, the world closer together. He does stuff for a reason. And, you know, it took for me to meet this one guy who was a Desert Storm vet. He had come back, you know, and he thought what he did was what he was supposed to do, protect and save his country. And when he came back, you know, he was called baby killer and this, that, and the other. And he's just like, whoa, I was just doing what I was told. I did my job. And we didn't kill kids. They, you know, my group personally, but some of them had kids running up to them strapped with bombs. What are we supposed to do, you know?
Right, exactly.
So when I came back, you know, I went to deep depression, got into drugs, got into booze. But then I realized that God does it for a reason. And the way he explained it to me, it made so much sense. And I'm like, you're right. He does.
He does.
You're absolutely right.
I agree.
You know? And so ever since then, you know, my mind frame has kind of changed on that a lot. And I now know he does things for a reason. Even if the outcome isn't good,
right,
he does things for a reason.
Right. I agree. Yeah. You know, that's the thing. The universe never works on your timetable. And God does things for a reason, and it doesn't. You necessarily don't have to understand why, because it's God, you know.
Absolutely, you know. And another thing, you know, we're not in control of our lives. He is,
right.
You know. He already has our life path laid out for us. We just got to follow the road. And he gives us choices. You can go the left way, you can go the right way. And that's, you know, he'll always give you that option. And it's up to you to be conscious of what it is you're going to do and go down whichever path you think is right.
I agree. We're on the same page, and we're almost out of time. So, David, how can people get a hold of you and find your book?
Oh, okay. To get a hold of my book, you can go on to Amazon.com for paperback,
yes,
as well as ebook. You can go on to Kobo, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, as well as my website, www.davidtuckero.com. TUCCARO.com. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me on my website again, DavidTuckero.com. You can find me on Facebook on DavidTuckero.com or on Twitter at DJTuckero.com.
So you're everywhere, is what you're saying.
Every single where, yes.
And
also, I love when people reach out to me, because I love to, you know, reach back to them and, you know, see where they're at. And if I can be of help to them, I'd love to be of help to them. You know, that's just what I'm here for.
And Delete Blood Cancer, you have that info on your website as well?
Absolutely, yeah. If you go onto my website, DavidTuckero, TUCCARO.com, there's a link there that says Become a Donor. Click on that link, and all the information is right there, and it is a painless process.
Excellent. Well, Hang on, David. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mel Majerus. I am the Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's the Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.